A Netflix docu-series called Cheer follows the United States' best junior college competitive cheer squad. Navarro College in Corsicana, near Dallas. They're training for the 2019 National Championships in Daytona. And only half the 40-member team will make mat or get selected. It's become a massive hit since its release in January. It's been spoofed on Saturday Night Live. And with members of the squad now celebrities and influencers. Some, however, have seen it as a darker story, a depiction of athletes breaking themselves at the behest of an authority figure. Ariel Kilka is a co-creator of Cheer, and she joins me now on Twitter. What are you on? Oh, she's
on Skype.
Jolly good. Skype's a very good thing in this day and age, isn't it?
It certainly is.
Because you were due to come to New Zealand and you were unable to come because of the travel restrictions. So I'm delighted to be able to talk to you about Cheer, which some are saying was an unlikely hit. But how do you feel about it?
You know, that's an interesting way to describe it. I would say we certainly weren't expecting it to be such a hit either. You know, this particular group of filmmakers, we had worked on Last Chance U, which is a football series, which is also very dear to my heart. And we were surprised that a show about cheerleaders surpassed the popularity of a show about football. But I think it's the right thing, and it actually makes a lot of sense in hindsight. But yeah, we definitely weren't expecting this big of a response.
How did it come about, Ariel?
Well, you know, it's kind of it happened. There was several people that all kind of were having the same idea simultaneously. I was working in post-production on Last Chance U, editing the football series. And in working on that show, you know, we were recognizing the opportunity that we had with a sports narrative to present an audience with something that they might not normally pay attention to. And for the case of Last Chance U, it was the story in the lives of young Black men in America. And, you know, as I was working on that show, I was like, oh my God, we have to do this for cheerleading. You know, I would love to work on a show about how hard it is to be a young girl in today's day and age. And as I was kind of having these thoughts separately, the team that was working in the field for Last Chance U, they started filming with the cheerleaders for the team at the college that they were with, and were discovering on their own that there was just this fantastic world that could be explored. And so then when we all kind of met up in the office, it was like the light bulb went on and we were like, yes, let's pursue this. This is great.
Did you know about cheerleading? Because this is not the kind of all-white, pom-pom, sideline cheerleading that people might think about stereotypically, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I had always kind of known that there was more to the cheerleading world than, you know, the stereotypes. But certainly once we started doing the research and dove into the project, we were like, oh, holy moly, this is incredible. You know, there's so much more to this. And it's an extremely large, popular sport, you know, and so it's kind of interesting that there had never really been this kind of a comprehensive documentary made about it. And so that was so exciting.
Was it obvious that you would choose to do Navarro College, given that it had won the championship, 13 times?
Yeah. So my co-producer, Chelsea Yarnell, she's the one who discovered Navarro through her research. And, you know, it made sense on paper to follow a school with such credits under their belt. And not only do they win in the junior college category, they actually win the grand national title several times, which is they get the highest points out of everyone in the competition, like year after year, you know, so that's an incredible feat. And so that kind of, you know, that sparked our interest, of course. And then we filmed a scout shoot with them, and that's when we got to meet the characters and meet Monica. And
A
of course,
scout shoot
Monica.
is, let's go and see if this will work, is it?
Yes, you have a limited amount of time and a limited amount of money to kind of go and make sure it's the right thing to pursue, before you go all in on something. So we had that opportunity to go and do that.
And Monica is a kind of irresistible figure, I imagine, for somebody such as you making a docu-series.
Yes, absolutely. She was definitely the after we met her and kind of realized how incredible and interesting she is, we knew it was the right decision to go to Navarro.
She's immaculately groomed. She's implacable.
Yes.
She's completely determined. The young people are devoted to her. Do you see a dark side to Monica? Because some do.
Yeah, and that's something that we definitely wanted to explore as we were editing the series. And it's something we didn't want to sugarcoat. Definitely. We as filmmakers always strive to present the truth. And so, while we take really good care of the subjects in the edit, we're not there to make anyone look stupid or to misrepresent them. We definitely also wanted to show all sides of somebody, show all the dimensions. And something that we kind of were, the big question we were trying to ask as we were filming this and as we were before we filmed, and once we realized how intense and dangerous of a sport that cheer truly is, it's like, why on earth would these people do this? And so that was the kind of the big question that we were constantly trying to answer as we were filming interviews with them and spending all this time with them. And I think it's something that, we started to see while we were in the field and then really refined it in the edit, in post-production. And I think so much of the themes that kind of emerged and presented themselves to us was how a young generation is coping with trauma. Not to give too many spoilers about the show for anybody who hasn't seen it, but as you learn more about these kids' backstories and where they come from, it was like time and time again, we were just kind of shocked with what they've dealt with in their pasts. And so I think where they come from and how they're kind of coping with some of the traumas that have happened to them, I think all of that's what led them into cheerleading, into this sport that is just so dangerous and yet so exciting and fulfilling for them in so many ways. And I think Monica is just a huge part of that, filling a role for them when a lot of them didn't have someone like her in their life that truly cared about them. And I mean, I will say Monica cares about these kids more than anything in her life. I mean, just as much as she cares about her own children. And that's the truth,
And yet, one of the most disturbing scenes is that one individual, TT, is forced to practice for defying her. And he re-injures his back and he's really in pain. And she doesn't move a muscle.
Yeah, yes, and disturbing is the right word to use for that. And of course, that's Monica has so much experience. She knows so much about injury, first of all, and then also about all of these kids. And she would never push anybody to do anything that she knew was the wrong thing to do. And they say that they have a saying that there's the difference between being hurt and hurting. And I think there is just kind of this, I mean, to an outsider, it seems like a crazy amount of trust that they have in each other and in the program and the structure of it to know when they should, Monica knew that TT was not going to be injuring his back in any permanent way. It was something that was not at risk in that moment. And, talking to TT afterwards and filming with him afterwards, I mean, it's in the series that he says himself, like, I'd do anything for Monica. And that, you know, that's something that actually he actually said that just hours after that moment that we filmed, you know, and it's like our jaws are on the ground just as much as we knew an audience's would be. But in the end, it was, it all made sense, you know, I mean, and it's, yeah, I mean, it's pretty jaw dropping for sure.
You've said that cheerleading is very dangerous, and in fact, it is the most dangerous sport for female athletes, apparently, accounting for over 65% of catastrophic sports injuries. Why is it so dangerous for female athletes?
Well, I think a lot of it's, you know, they're getting tossed into the air 20 feet high, 30 feet high. And one little thing can go wrong, and that's, you know, that's accounts for all of these injuries. And then I think also part of it is there's this just high level of competitiveness that they all have. And I think that's pushed the cheerleading industry into things that it's morphed, you know, the cheerleading industry has grown and changed so much, and everyone's challenging each other. So it's almost like a video game, you know, it's like one person learns a skill and then the next person has to come in and one up them. And so everyone's, it's just a series of people one upping each other until you get to this point where they're pushed to a limit of, you know, everything's just getting more and more dangerous. And so that, of course, is when the cheerleading industry steps in and sets lots of rules. I mean, the rules are overly complicated, and we didn't even try to understand them, but they do have limits put in place, and they have all these, you know, there's a structure that is attempting to make it safer and safer. But I mean, the reality of any sport, you know, is there's injuries. Sports are dangerous. I mean, I've made these shows, these sports shows, and I always think like, gosh, well, this is going to really convince people to not play sports. And it just seems to be the opposite every time.
There's another really disturbing scene, and it's Morgan, who was one of the five young people that you focus on in the series, and she hurts her ribs, and she's afraid to say that she's injured. So she sneaks off and gets checked out, and she refuses treatment because the muscle relaxers that they prescribe her would stop her from taking part in the practice. And so she defies medical advice and goes back, and all Monica seems to express is irritated by the fact that Morgan sought medical advice at all. I mean, things like that make me not like Monica very much, but I can see what you mean. She gets the best out of these kids, but how much damage are they being caused?
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, it's a good question. It's kind of a balancing act of, right, you know, what's worth it? And it's, I think if, for you and I, what's worth it is none of that. None of that would be worth it for you and I. But for a person like Morgan, you know, once you hear about her backstory and the struggles that she faced with her mental health and, you know, certain decisions that she had, certain thoughts that she had considered at some point to please a person and a team and to be a part of something that she felt like she could never have those feelings in life. You know, I mean, that's huge for a girl like Morgan. And I think that's why she put herself at risk and pushed through, you know, because she has this deep love and passion for her teammates and for this goal, you know, this mission that they're on, that they have, that gave them a sense of purpose in life. And, you know, if you put it in those terms of this is the first time in their lives some of these kids have felt like they're doing what they're supposed to be doing and have people that support and love them, I mean, I understand it. I get why she's risking all these things.
Almost all the young men are gay and mainly black or Hispanic. And this is in conservative small town Texas. Is it that they find a refuge in the cheerleading squad?
Yeah, I think absolutely. You know, it's the industry is so accepting of all of everyone, you know, people of all race and gender. I mean, it's one of the few co-ed sports really that exists. And I think there
Has
for
it
a lot of
always
them,
been co-ed, or is that quite a recent development?
You know, there's different divisions. There are some teams that are all girl teams, and then there's some that are co-ed. But I mean, if you look back at the true history of cheerleading, it actually started with men. Men were the cheerleaders at sports games, and it wasn't until a war where all the men went away that the women took over. And when the men came back, the women said, "No, nah, we're doing this now." So it's actually, you know, it's interesting that it's morphed in such ways. But yeah, the current modern day version of it is, you know, there's all sorts of cheerleading, but the co-ed teams are some of the higher level, and I think, I mean, I might be inaccurate with this. I'm not totally professional with my cheerleading information, but I think that they get more, the stunts are more dangerous when there's men involved because there's more strength and more people and all of that. But yes, to answer your question, like a person like Ladarius and Jerry, you know, Ladarius particularly is a very athletic guy, and he was struggling in his life with being bullied about his sexuality as a young man. And when he found cheerleading, that's when he found his family and his home and people that accepted him and welcomed him.
Do you worry? I mean, they've all gone on to be incredibly famous celebrities now in that way that we do these days. Do you worry about them? They're still so young.
Yeah, you know, that's definitely been on, I think, all of our minds is that, you know, in part, we weren't expecting this. We weren't expecting it to be as big. And fame can be hard, you know, especially for someone who's young. And so there's definitely like a motherly instinct that we have that, you know, we worry about them. But I think all of the attention that they've received so far has been nothing but positive for them. You know, not just the attention, but they, you know, they're especially nowadays with like influencer, they're able to make money. And I know that's been extremely helpful for many of them who come from extreme need, you know, and our five main characters that we had in the series, they all went back to Navarro for another year. So they have the wisdom of Monica, their mother hen, kind of in their corner still, which actually gives me a lot of comfort that she's got their back during this transitional time in their lives.
What would cheerleaders normally do after college? Because it's not a sport, and this point is made in the docuseries, with a future for them in it.
Yeah, that's something that we found really interesting and kind of again goes to this big question of like, why are they doing this? Because it's so different from other professional sports where there's a career path out of it, you know, for 1% of them, of course, but they're in their own heads, they're picturing themselves making a living doing what they're doing. And so all the risks kind of seem to make more sense. You know, with football, you're risking great injury, of course, but on the other side of it could be a multi-million-dollar contract. And that doesn't exist for cheerleading. There's nothing after college cheerleading. So there's a small percentage of them that would be coaches, of course, or, you know, gym owners. There's jobs in the cheerleading industry, but that's just a very select few people that would go into it. Something that we saw that we found really inspiring is that outside of cheerleading, the institutions that these people are gaining and learning through cheerleading, we're setting them up for their future regardless. You know, and it's almost they're more realistic in a way because there isn't this like false hope of you're going to get a $1 million contract. So they're kind of just like gearing up towards being a successful professional.
Yeah, I mean the really interesting. I mean, I'm sure you intended the ambiguity of the Monica figure You would have read that Atlantic article that says that maybe it shouldn't have surprised me that so many people watched Cheer and judged Monica Aldama an inspirational American leader instead of a manipulative, reckless glory hound. And watching the series and talking to you, I'm completely on the fence because I can see what good she's done for these kids, but I can also see how vulnerable they are to that kind of authority.
Yeah, and, you know, we've never held back in other series that we've worked on, you know, the football shows that we did. A lot of those coaches actually came off much worse than Monica. I think there's, you know, and that's something we dealt with on, you know, on the other series too, is like, you know, what's really going on here? And, you know, what does it take to be a leader and to influence people into being their very best? You know, what does it take and when is it too much? And so even just...
It's like that movie Whiplash. Did you see that?
No, I haven't.
Ah, well, you think you come out thinking, oh my God, that guy's a monster, but he had a point. Do you know what I mean?
Right, exactly. And it's, you know, what works for somebody might be too much for somebody else. And yeah, and it's, you know, and you know, what's the greater good of all of this? And is it worth it? And I think with the work of documentary filmmaking, I think if the audience is asking themselves those questions, and if you're wondering, like, I don't truly know how I feel about this person, I think we've done our job as documentary filmmakers. You know, I mean, life is complicated. It's not black and white. And to boil something down and to kind of present somebody either as a villain or to, you know, completely sugarcoat everything and just have her be a hero, you know, these two things, they can coexist, you know, and that's, I think that's really important to life in general. And I think I wish that, you know, I'm seeing more documentaries kind of take that kind of an approach rather than, you know, reality TV where, you know, people are basically cast into being what the, you know, the production company wants them to be, you know. And so, yeah, we're just kind of, we're presenting both sides and wanting the audience to think about the show for longer than it takes to watch it. And I think that's part of the reason it's been successful is because it's dense and, you know, people are asking themselves questions about themselves.
I'm talking to Ariel Kilker about the docu-series Cheer. Some people, listeners, are texting me worried about Lexi, who had a rough time. Is she all right?
She is. She's back at Navarro. I've kept in touch with all of the kids, of course, because they, you know, they've become my friends. We've spent so much time with them, both in the field and then, of course, in the edit. And yes, she's doing great. She's back at Navarro. She has the support system and the structure, which, you know, she herself will admit that she needed. And yeah, I find her to be a very brave young lady. I mean, the things that happened to her while we were filming, were pretty atrocious. And, the fact that she came out on the other side of it and, you know, instead of feeling shamed for what happened to her, she turned around and said, you know, like, shame on you. And I think that's such a brave thing that she allowed us to tell this story and allowed us to enter her life in a time when she was so vulnerable. So I really have so much admiration for her. I think she's just an incredible lady.
There were difficulties in shooting the Champs in Daytona, which, of course, was the climax of the whole docuseries. And you had to rely, I think, on phone footage of the event.
Yes.
Was that entirely a disappointment? Or I was talking to somebody that people call an artisanal movie maker before, you know, uses a hand-cranked camera and post-shoot synchronization, and it all goes to atmosphere. And I suspect that the phone footage does exactly that in Cheer.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was an ongoing discussion that we didn't have an answer on until the proximity was just a couple days before we went out there to film the championship was in Daytona. So it was definitely stressful, and we were concerned about, you know, what we were going to get, because it's just so up in the air at that point. You don't know what you're going to get. But I think ultimately the effect that it had on the docuseries is, I feel like it added a layer of intensity to it, in a way that, you know, even if we had access, full access, and, you know, every camera that we would have ever dreamed of to have there, I don't know if we would have been able to tell the story in a way that was better than what we got.
Yeah. Why weren't you able to do the filming of the champs?
The company that owns a lot of cheerleading, that's to say gyms, uniforms, the competition, you know, they had a lot of valid reasons for not wanting to allow a disruptive documentary crew at this event that's full of children, you know, of young kids. A lot of them are, you know, not 18 yet. And so they had a lot of reservations about allowing, you know, just giving free rein access to a crew of people. And, you know, I can understand that. Of course, it was frustrating at the time, but, you know, everyone has a job to do, and they're looking out for the best of their sport and their cheerleaders.
And it was they didn't want to give publicity, or I don't quite understand.
No, it wasn't a publicity thing. It was more of a disruption of the actual event. They knew what it would look like to have a bunch of cameras around, and, you know, you have microphones, boom poles, and
so
whatnot,
it would distract people from performing.
Yes.
Well, that seems
cheerleading communities. Yeah, it's very superstitious. And so,
oh no! Do you think?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it sounded quite reasonable under the circumstances. It's such a high pressure performance. No distractions
absolutely.
Would be welcome.
Absolutely.
So yes. Why do you call that superstitious?
Oh, well, from what we've seen is the cheerleading community is very superstitious. So I could see a team that's like, well, we weren't used to having a documentary crew here. This has thrown us off our game, you know, and like even just wondering if the documentary crew is going to throw them off their game would cause them the stress, and they would just, you know, I mean, some of these kids, like, they have to touch the floor 2 times before they go up there, you know? And so if one little thing is different from how they've perceived it to be, you know, they just didn't want to throw people off in that way.
Right. Is there a second series?
We will all want there to be a second series.
Mm-hmm.
So we shall see.
I mean, the original crew have gone on to other things now, presumably, and so that wouldn't happen.
Well, and Daytona's been canceled this year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, which has just been, it's been heartbreaking to see all the kids on social media responding to that, of course. They've all put so much
trained
into it.
Trained and trained for their 2 minutes and 15 seconds.
Yep. Yeah, it's pretty tragic.
What about you? As I said, you were supposed to be coming out here for the big screen symposium in Auckland in a couple of weeks' time. That's been postponed, which is, you know, we're talking to you nevertheless. Are you in lockdown?
Yes, actually, as of last night, it was announced that all of California is under mandatory, I think they're calling it the Safer at Home Initiative, where it's essential businesses only are allowed to operate. It's, you know, part of me is relieved that it's now everyone has to take it as seriously as it is. And I'll hope to see less posts of people out socializing at birthday parties and whatnot. But of course, it is very surreal and strange. And this nothing like this has ever happened in our lifetime. And so it's, of course, pretty stressful and scary.
Were you prepared for a lengthy stay at home?
Yes, actually, me and my husband, we went to the store and stocked up, not excessively, just for about a week and a half, so that we could be responsible and not kind of hoard all of the goods and products. But yeah, we're hunkered in, ready to weather this as long as it may last.
Best of luck to you. Thanks for joining us this morning, Ariel.
Ariel, thank you so much.
Cheers. She's the co-curator, co-producer of Cheer, which is the docuseries on Netflix about cheerleaders.